Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Good morning and welcome to the News Talk Live presidential debate. That's the first hour of our show. The remaining 2 hours, pretty much business as usual. Now, we are also streaming. We are streaming on Facebook and YouTube. So if you fancy looking at the two candidates, you can do so on those channels. But of course, we're live here on the radio. I want to welcome to our studio Heather Humphreys, who is the nominee of Fine Gael, and Catherine Connolly, who is the nominee of the Left, with support from other parties like Sinn Féin. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Now,
it is a debate, so I just want to alert you to the fact that your mics are open all the time. If something one of you says that the other objects to, please interject in a controlled manner if possible, but we want this to be a debate rather than a series of interviews. And we want to start, and the lots have been drawn, so Catherine Connolly, you are to get the first question, but I'll be following up, obviously, with Heather. Article 12 of the Constitution says that the President shall take precedence over all other persons in the state, which means you're our first citizen should you become President. So, Catherine, to you, what is it about you? What is so special about you that you deserve to be our first citizen?
Well, I do sparagar mil magda soctan jesh kancha agusan jesh gisparagta. Thank you for the opportunity
of being here.
And you mentioned Article 12 of the Constitution, and Article 12, subsection 8, obliges me as President to take a public and solemn vow to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland.
No, but I know what the Constitution says, and you'd like to adhere. What is it about that makes you special?
That is the essence of what my presidency is about, to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland. We're at a juncture in our country where we need a courageous president, a president that's unafraid to use our voice on behalf of the ordinary people of Ireland. Now more than ever, we need a voice for peace. We need a voice to articulate the existential threat posed by climate change, and we need a voice to recognise and value the tremendous
Why are you that voice? That's the point of my question.
I believe I have the characteristics necessary for a president, given my track record and given the various roles that I have served in. I have an ability to listen, to hear and to reflect. I have an ability to reflect before I speak on any topic and to realise that quick retorts are not helpful.
Now, this sounds like an excuse for some of the slow answers you gave during the campaign, and we'll come to those in a little while. But the question again about you will articulate on behalf of the people. The Constitution suggests that you really have to park your political prejudices at the door.
I don't have political prejudice.
Well,
I
your
have,
political I, views, which would have, be maybe at odds with the current
if,
government.
If I may, I don't have political prejudice. I have stood proudly as a TD since 2016. I will stand proudly and humbly as President of Ireland for the reasons that I've articulated. And if you allow me, I'll articulate more. We need a voice in the presidency that's not more of the same from a government. Unfortunately, Heather is a government candidate endorsed by Fine Gael and by the...
It sounds like you want to bring politics to the park, whereas you're obliged to park your politics at the gates of the Oras, are you not?
I have no difficulty seeing the different roles as a president and as a politician. A president, as you said, takes precedent over everybody else in the country, but to do so with humility and realising the privilege that is to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland.
All right, Heather Humphreys, what makes you a fit candidate to take on the role of first citizen?
Well, I bring a lot of experience to this job. I bring a life experience and I bring political experience. Of course, I've spent many years working as a credit union manager, and I saw the challenges that people face firsthand on the ground. I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, and I have three beautiful grandchildren. And I think what kind of an Ireland do I want to see them grow up in?
Okay, again, yeah. The question I asked Catherine is about what is it about you personally that would make you our first citizen, that would fit you for that role?
Yeah, well, I have, as I said, I want to see an Ireland that is compassionate, an Ireland that is unified, an Ireland that shows dignity and respect. And as president, I bring a skill set to that that means that I can bring people together. I have a track record in bringing people together, in unifying people.
But when you talk about the problems that we have, and we have many in this country, people will say to you quite rightly, listen, you were in government, why didn't you do something? Why didn't you solve all those problems that you're now so apparently concerned about?
Yeah, well, of course, I stepped up and I did serve in government, and I've never had the advantage of being able to stand on the opposition benches and say exactly what I wanted to say. But I stepped up. I stepped up and I took a lot of hard decisions, and I have a proud record in government. I was the minister who brought in the Hot School Meals programme that look after our young children in primary school. I was the minister who introduced auto-enrolment. It took 30 years to get there. That means people will have a pension. And I'm the minister that
has engaged. What about Catherine's charge that it's more of the same, that you go in there and you'll toe the government line because that's where you come from?
No. Well, actually, I've got support right across the board. I've been nominated by the Fine Gael Party. I've been supported by independents right across this country. I'm also getting support from Fianna Fáil Party, from members of the Labour Party, from members of the Green Party. So I am a centrist person. I'm a candidate of the centre, and I promise to bring to this role. I promise to bring honesty, commitment, and service.
Now I'll stay with you because Catherine got the first question. You get the second one in rotation. Michael D. Higgins promised to serve one term when we all voted for him, or those who did voted for him against Sean Gallagher. Promised one term, 7 years only. He stayed on for two terms. He broke a commitment. What do you think of that behaviour by the current president?
Well, the current president is very, very popular. And I have to say he has done a great job.
That's not the question. The question was, what do you think of someone who makes a commitment in an election as president for our first citizen and then breaks that commitment?
Yeah, well, I think to be fair to him, I'm sure he only intended to serve one term, but he got the opportunity to return, and he was very, very popular, and he got 70% of the vote the last time. So I think the people have spoken. As far as I'm concerned, I will be serving one term and one term only. That is my
Catherine, what do you think of Michael D breaking a commitment to the electorate?
I think Michael D has served the people of Ireland very well. I think he's more than popular. He's popular because of what he stands for. And he's had the courage to speak out and give the people of Ireland hope.
Is 14 years not an interminably long space of time for any human being to give to a job and for all the rest of it to have the same president? One of my colleagues, the first time he saw a presidential election was when he was 11 years old. So 7 years plus seven is 14. It's a very, very long term. Would you favour shortening it?
No, I wouldn't. I think 7 years, it used to be the age of reason when I was growing up. You reached the age of reason after 7 years. And I think 7 years is a good term to serve as president of Ireland. And also, if I look on the last campaign, my campaign since July, it feels like 7 years. It's been so long, but it's been wonderful. I've been out since the third week of July engaging with
people. I just want to get an answer from both of you. When someone makes a commitment, a solemn commitment in an election, it may govern the reason that people vote for that person. And then in this case, however worthy Michael D was and is to be our two-term president, he actually broke a commitment. I'm asking you what you think of that breaking of a commitment, because you're both going to make commitments now. How are we to know that you would adhere to those commitments?
Well, I think my record is very clear. I've never made a promise to somebody that I didn't try to keep. And I have always said to some people, can you do this for me? And I said, well, I can only do my best. So I think you'll have to ask the president himself why he decided to run for a second term. And as I said, and as Catherine has said, he has been an excellent president and the people voted for him, and that's democracy. So I suppose after 7 years, he gave the people the choice and they chose to re-elect him. He didn't get he wasn't just nominated and he went straight back into the park. He went through the electoral process. So he's democratically elected after 7 years. So that at the end of the day was the people's choice.
So that's the question again to you, Catherine. I mean, I've heard from Heather. How do we know that anything you say now could be trusted going forward?
See, Pat, you're going from a current president to me.
And I'm asking you what you think of someone who makes a commitment electorally and then breaks it. Yeah.
Actually, the thing about a presidential election, it's up to the people to decide. And so the current president, Michael Dee, decided to stand again against what he had said. But the people actually elected him. And so that's the thing about this election. It's very different. We can't elect a Taoiseach or a Taoiseach, but we can elect our president. And that's one of the really important things about this presidency. Michael Dee, the current president, did what he did, and the people re-elected him. In relation to myself, I stand on my record. I have an absolute commitment to social justice and equality from a very early age.
How will you cope with that, being circumscribed maybe by government policy of the day? You have all these commitments which require legislative action to pursue and to achieve, and you'll be circumscribed by the limitations of the office.
I wouldn't use words like that in relation to the privilege of serving as president of this.
I'm saying, what can you do?
Oh, sorry, as president of this beautiful country. And I can use my voice in as many ways as possible. In fact, I've given my first commitment is to receive representatives of carers in our community who are undervalued and underpaid, and to value their work. I've given a commitment to go back and visit all of the centres that I visited in my campaign to give recognition to the tremendous work that's going on.
I was going to ask a question, and maybe you've answered it now. The theme of, for example, Mary Robinson's presidency was, at the beginning, the candle in the window for the emigrants. And then we had, with Mary McAleese, reconciliation process in Northern Ireland. That was a fundamental theme of her presidency. Michael Dee, I suppose, besides speaking out internationally, and we'll talk about that later in the debate, a commitment to the arts. And I don't know how many arts occasions he hosted in the Aura. So, Heather, what would the theme of your presidency be?
Yeah, well, I'm a former minister for the arts, just like Michael Dee Higgins was, and I'm absolutely committed to the arts. And I think 2016.
But is that your theme?
No, the theme, I am absolutely committed to the arts. Number one, the theme of my presidency is number one, community. I'd say in nearly every parish in this country, and I see the work of communities right across the country. I see the work of volunteers, so I want to support them, and I do want to introduce a community recognition award. By the president, so that people are recognised and they are.
Can you do that off your own bat?
Yes, you can do that. It's very simple. It's a recognition.
Can the president fund that and organise it without help from the Oireachtas?
Yeah, well, I believe the president can liaise with the relevant local authorities, the relevant community groups, and it's a recognition of the work that they've done, and it's important that we recognise them. But the second theme of my presidency is unity. I want, we live in a divisive world, so I want to bring people together, and I want to build on the work of Mary McAleese in terms of building bridges with Northern Ireland, and that's something that's very that I'm really, really committed to. Okay. I live on the border, as you know. I'm very conscious of the divisions that are still there, and I was only in Belfast last week. I visited Mary McAleese's old school, St Dominic's. I got to chat with the nuns and the students there. I went out to a unionist area, and they spoke to me as well. And they said to me, Heather, they said, we have peace, but there's a lot of division. I feel I'm uniquely placed to work on that. And finally, I want to represent Ireland on the world stage in terms of opening doors for Irish businesses.
We'll be talking about that later on conversation.
Those are my themes.
Catherine, your theme.
I have a number of themes, Pat. And the day we vote, it will be the 80th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights. And I think that's significant for me and for the country. I will be a voice for peace at a time where a voice for peace is utterly necessary. I will be a voice, as I said, in relation to climate change and the existential threat posed by climate change. Communities I've already outlined. I will also be a voice for a united Ireland. Article 3 of the Constitution sets out that it is the firm will of the Irish people to have a united Ireland. I would love if that happened during my tenure, and if not, that at least all the groundwork and preparatory work will have taken place.
But the president really can't get involved in that kind of, because that is about base politics.
Absolutely. The framework has been set in the Good Friday Agreement and in Article 3 of the Constitution. But there will be a role for the president in reaching out to different communities, an open aura.
A couple of quick things before we leave this topic of the presidential role and the rest of it. The aura is 130 acres. Too much? Heather?
Yeah, well, the
OPW could do with 100 acres or so to provide recreational and other facilities in the Phoenix Park for the citizens.
Yeah, well, that's a matter for the
what
government
do you think?
At the end
130
of the
acres?
Well, I didn't even realise there was 130 acres. That's not what's attracting me to this job. This job is about service. This job is about uniting the people of this country. This job has been
could it be downsized
voice.
A bit? Well, there's still have 30 acres left around the big house.
Well, I don't live on 30 acres in terms of my house. It's a small, I think it's out in the country. It's about a half an acre site and it's quite sufficient
for me.
That's
not the question. The question is about the Oris. Catherine, what do you think?
Pat, just one second. I'll just answer the question. The point I'm making here is that has been established as Oris and Uachtaráin. It's the people's house. It's the people's residence. It belongs to the people of Ireland. And those the acres, I don't know how they're used. I'm sure they're used for good, put to good use by the OPW. And if people want to reduce the size, that's fine with me. Mm. I don't have a problem with that.
I think it's a wonderful asset for the people of Ireland, 130 acres. And if the OPW own that, but it's owned for the people of Ireland. And I'll certainly be exploring what possibilities are there in relation to that, to be an example in relation to biodiversity projects, if that's possible. I don't know what restraints will be on me, but I'll certainly be looking at the possibilities to have that as an asylum in the true sense of the word, in the true sense of the word, for people to enjoy the 130 acres while recognising the challenges posed by climate change and biodiversity.
The Oris is off limits for so many people. People only get there on the invitation of the president. So when you say it's for the people of Ireland, most of the people in Ireland do not get to see Oris and Uachtaráin. Now, final thing.
In fairness, Pat, I've met a lot of people when I've been out on the campaign trail, and a lot of people said they got to the Oris and it was so special. And they said, Heather, if you get elected, will you bring us back again? So many people, it is the people's house, and there's many, many different opportunities to bring people to the Oris. But as president, I would bring the Oris to the people. I will go to the communities. I will sit down and have those conversations with them. And I will speak to them. I'll hear their concerns.
So you believe
you
would be the personification of a building in bringing yourself to an event, you're bringing the Oris. That's not the question I asked.
No, but what I'm saying is what I would do. It's not just about Oris and Uachtaráin, the building. It's about bringing the Oris to the people. And it's about talking to them.
Final question to you both.
Because it is a very important thing when the president
goes to
visit.
Final question to you both in this section. Who's going to be living in the Oris if you are president, Catherine?
Myself and my husband.
That's it. Big house for two people.
That's correct.
Absolutely. Servants and all the rest of it for two people. Okay, Heather, who's going to be living in the Oris if you're president?
Yeah, I'd be living in the Oris with my husband.
Even though he's a farm to run?
Yeah, well, he's quite capable of running the farm as well. And he has his job, and I respect that. And I will have my job to do, and he will respect me. So, yes, two of us.
All right, thank you both for part one, where we're talking about the role of the president. Lots more questions to come up after this.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Break. Welcome back to the News Talk presidential debate, which of course is live on the radio, but also it is streaming on our social channels on Facebook and on YouTube. Catherine Connolly and Heather Humphreys with me. Now, the president has a certain number of powers, and one of them is referring a bill that the president has concerns about to the Supreme Court. So, Catherine, what would you have to be wrong with the bill for you to refer it?
Well, actually, it's a very restricted role. Pat, in relation to what a president can do. And so the president, with the assistance of the Council of State, an expert.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Advice decides whether the bill is in compliance with the Constitution.
Does the President therefore have to take the advice of the Council of State, which would be made up of nominees from the President but also former Taoiseach who might have a different worldview, shall we say, to yourself?
There's a range of people on the Council of State, and the President has the power to nominate up to 7. And it's set out in the Constitution who sits on the Council of State, the Chief Justice, the President of the High Court and so on, and the ex-Taoiseach.
But you don't have to take the advice. You listen to them, they batted back and forward, and then you decide, isn't that it?
You decide with the expert advice of the Council of
State.
But
it doesn't mean you have to take it.
But you have to listen, and you have to reflect on the advice given by experienced people, President of the Supreme Court, President of the High Court, and so on.
But if they all come from a particular political culture, even the judges, if they come from the establishment, as it were, and you cast yourself as an anti-establishment figure, you could still thwart them, could you not?
You're saying quite a lot there, and you're anti-establishment figure, which I wouldn't look on myself as. As president, I would be sitting there listening to expert advice on the specific issue of whether the bill complies or doesn't comply with the Constitution. If we form an opinion that it doesn't, and ultimately I make that decision, then I refer it to the Supreme Court. And just, it's important to point out to the listeners, if I do that and the Supreme Court hold that it's constitutional, that bill can never be challenged again. If on the other hand...
So are you saying that it's something you would not do lightly in any circumstance?
It's a most serious duty, a most onerous duty to look at. And if it's not referred to the Supreme Court, then I sign it into law as president, and it can be challenged at some future
Heather
date.
Heather Humphreys, the same question to you.
Well, the primary function of the president, as set out in the Constitution, is to protect the Constitution. And, of course, all of the legislation that comes through the Oireachtas must be signed by the president. But if the president has any concerns whatsoever regarding the constitutionality of the bill, you call in the Council of State, you get their advice. If you're still not happy that it doesn't comply with the Constitution, you can refer it to the Supreme Court. The only problem there, as Catherine has said, if you refer it, then it cannot be challenged. That particular bill cannot be challenged in the courts. So it is a very, very serious responsibility that the President has, and I will certainly fulfil that role with the diligence and respect and duty it deserves.
Now, people might say that you're much more likely, given the current government and your history with Fine Gael in government and so on, that you're very unlikely to thwart the wishes of your former colleagues. That may not be the case.
No, it's not about that. It's not about the wishes of anybody. It's the very clear question is, does this bill comply with the Constitution? And that's the decision that the President has to make. And I will make that decision, and I will always represent the people and protect the Constitution.
And you undertake to always take the advice of the Council of State?
Oh, of course I will take the advice of the Council of State, but if I still am unsure, and the Council of State...
No, I didn't mean listen to it. I mean act on the advice of the Council of State.
Of course you would act
on
the advice.
So if they say don't challenge, you won't challenge.
No, if I'm not happy. If that is absolutely the right of the President. You can listen to the advice if you still think it is not within the Constitution. For example, the Judicial Appointments Bill was referred by President Michael D. Higgins to the Supreme Court. And that's a good example because he referred to the Supreme Court to test his constitutionality. So that actually meant that if judges were appointed, if they had been appointed in the interim based on the bill, it could have caused problems down the road. But he referred that. And that was a good example of a bill that it was right to send to the Supreme Court.
What I'm asking is about second guessing the Council of State. And you're saying...
I won't second guess anybody. I'll take advice.
Would you say if you still have reservations that... And you personally, you're not a lawyer.
No.
Catherine, on the other hand, is.
Yeah.
So you'd imagine that she might have reservations that would be different to the reservations or otherwise of the Council of State. But you're not a lawyer. So are you doing a sort of a devil air that look into your own heart without the expertise because you're turning down the Council of State's advice?
Oh, I'm absolutely not. Absolutely not turning down their advice. I'm listening to their advice, and their advice might be refer it to the Supreme Court. I will take their advice. That is the purpose of the Council of State. And by the way, the President does have an opportunity to nominate people to the Council of State, and I would like to appoint more women to the Council of State, so to bring up the gender balance. I know there's a lot of former Taoiseach and judges. There are some women there, but I really would like to get more women involved in the Council of State. Particularly young women.
Is that tokenism?
No, it's certainly not. If you look at my record in terms of appointing people to boards, I've always tried to have a 50-50 balance, and sometimes I even manage to get more women than men on state boards.
Now, Catherine, one of the problems you might have would be the renewal of the Emergency Powers Act, giving the position of the Special Criminal Court its legitimacy. Would you have any difficulty about signing such a bill?
You see, I think the questions are being framed in terms of my difficulties as perceived with my record. And I have served in every role as professionally as possible. I have been a TD since 2016, a Las Cian Corla, the first ever female elected Las Cian Corla. And every single role that I have had the privilege of serving in, I've served to the best of my ability, Pat. And so if we look at the role of president, there are many roles that the president has, some more restricted than others. And looking at legislation, as a president, with the assistance and advice of the Council of State, it's absolutely vital that I take that seriously and look at it. I can't speculate.
What do you think, then, of the Special Criminal Court?
I'm on record for the Special Criminal Court. It should be abolished. But I'm not alone in that. The
That's not the point. You would be in a unique position as president to be signing the bill otherwise.
I would love to answer.
What would you do?
I would love to answer your questions as quick as you want, but sometimes there's a little complexity. So let's look at the Special Criminal Court.
We're talking about legislation that comes to you.
You actually raised the Special Criminal Court and said I opposed it, and I'm telling you that two reports, we have a majority report and a minority report, both of those set up by the government, and they have those reports, haven't acted on them, said abolish the Special Criminal Court, albeit with different replacement mechanisms. But the very entity set up by the government said abolish the Special Criminal Court. The majority report said have a court on a continuous basis, not a court based on emergency powers. Both the minority and the majority were extremely concerned about continuous court, Special Criminal Court, sitting on the basis of emergency powers. Both reports said abolish it.
Heather.
I absolutely support the Special Criminal Court, and I have to point out to Catherine that she did employ somebody in the Dáil that was convicted by the Special Criminal Court on firearms charges. So I fully support it, and I will continue to support it where it has seen it. You know, it served us well.
Can I come in on that? The Special Criminal Court is the Special Criminal Court. That's the law of the land. We have no choice but to uphold the law of the land. Absolutely. And to bring in what Heather has done in the manner she has done is absolutely unacceptable.
We'll be coming to that, because it is an issue.
She's brought it in now in relation to the Special Criminal Court, which is the law of the land. As a TD, as a citizen and as president, I have to uphold the law of the land. There's absolutely no question about that. The issue here separately in relation to the Special Criminal Court is the failure of Heather's government, of which she was a minister, to deal with the reports that's on the government shelf in relation to the serious concerns about the continuation of the Special Criminal Court based on emergency legislation.
Are you in favour, if it was set up on a statutory continuous basis, you'd have no problem with a special court that dealt with...
First of all, I have to articulate the issue. And that's the first thing one has to do. Secondly, I'm on record for supporting the minority report. Thirdly, the Special Criminal Court is part of our law, which we have to uphold. And the bringing in of a specific case and a person whose privacy has been trespassed upon to score a point is simply unacceptable to me, Pat.
Well, it's one of the points that the listeners, and I'm sure those who are viewing us on Facebook and YouTube, want addressed. And that's the idea that you would bring someone into the Dáil, to the Houses of the Oireachtas, who had been tried and convicted in the Special Criminal Court, pleading not guilty and not offering any defence. And when you bear in mind that in the van where they were apprehended, there was two handguns, a stun gun, ammunition, cable ties, black pillowcases and petrol cans. Okay. Now, what do you think they were up to?
First of all, the facts are there, and the Special Criminal Court found the woman guilty. She served a prison sentence. She left before her term was up in the prison. Such was her rehabilitation record. So conflating that with my attitude to the Special Criminal Court is not acceptable to me. The Special Criminal Court is the law of our land till we change it. In relation to the person, let me just say, over and over, I find it absolutely unacceptable that this person's privacy has been trespassed upon, unforgivably so, to try
you, but
and...
But you are the reason it was trespassed upon. If you hadn't been running for the presidency, we'd never have heard about
that's
her.
That's an interesting...
If you hadn't brought her into the Doyle, signing her in every day into the most sensitive building in the country...
That in itself is an interesting way of putting it. We would never have heard, because there was nothing to hear. Because
there was. Well, everything is in the public domain about the conviction.
You asked us to debate, and I'm truly doing my best to give the facts. In relation to this, this story grew from unnamed sources, accusations and allegations that I interfered in some way with an appeal process and with other allegations, all of which are absolutely...
Do you accept that you made a mistake in employing this person?
Absolutely unfounded. I did everything right, and so did the person. From day one...
You may have obeyed the law to the niceties of it, that you signed someone in, but the general thing that you've someone who's got a particular background involving this conviction, and that you would feel that that person is a safe person to bring into the houses of the Oireachtas.
You see, that person was an absolute example of a success story in relation to rehabilitation.
Yeah, we've heard a lot from you.
Highly recommended from TDs, in particular, Eamon O'Queeve, a respected member of the Dáil, who visited the prison on a regular basis.
Well, can I just say that part of any rehabilitation process is accepting that you made a mistake. Now, this particular person pleaded not guilty. Catherine brought that person into the houses, into the Dáil, without the necessary Garda clearance for six months. You didn't have the Garda clearance, Catherine, and that's a fact. I can't change that. But I'll tell you what I do want to ask you, and you still haven't answered. This woman was found in possession of guns and a number of other things. Did you ever ask her what she was going to do with them? And I think that's a reasonable question.
I think the reasonable question is...
No, but what was she going to do with them, Catherine?
I think the reasonable question is what is our opinion on rehabilitation?
But it's not about rehabilitation, it's about what she was going to do with the guns.
If I could. Are we going to look at what rehabilitation means? Mm. Are we going to double and trebly punish people? The amount of people and support I've got from people who have benefited from a second chance and from those haven't benefited.
It wasn't the only job that was out there, okay? But you decided to take someone who had this particular conviction involving firearms and all the rest of the paraphernalia we heard about. What were they up to? We don't know. You haven't explained what you inquired about, what they were up to. And there were other job opportunities available, surely, you didn't have to bring them into the Dáil.
You don't bring a bank robber in to run a bank.
If we could have some level of a rational discussion and debate in relation to rehabilitation and what it means, if we could have some honesty into what happened here, no rules were broken, absolutely none. I'll try and deal with the allegations that have come.
No, but a lot of your responses, Catherine, over the course of this campaign have been about, you know, obeying the particular rules and so on. And we'll come to...
There's a generalisation here again, Pat, from you in relation to me. This is a specific issue that has arisen that over and over I've answered. It would be helpful if those people who made allegations against me that I interfered in somewhere or withdrew those allegations and recognised that they weren't accurate and founded on nothing.
The point here is and it's very clear, you're supposed to have Garda clearance before you bring people into the Dáil to work for you, and we all know that you have to get Garda clearance. That is accurate, Catherine.
Not accurate.
Well, it is accurate. You can bring people in on day passes.
Are we going to allow further untruths?
Let me finish here. That lady was a risk at the very least. She posed a risk to our national parliament. She had access to ministers, she had access to TDs, she had access to a lot of information, and she had been convicted and she had pleaded not guilty to a firearms offence. So I'm still asking the question.
Is there no forgiveness in you that someone can turn their life around?
Yeah, but you can turn your life around, but there's different levels of crime, there's different types of rehabilitation. If she had got a job and maybe had started somewhere else and then moved along, and she was only out of jail and she was brought into our national parliament, and that is a concern because she did pose a real risk, and the Gardaí did not give the clearance. And it's very, very clear that Catherine didn't get the clearance, but she brought her in for 6 months on a day pass. You bring people in on a day pass for maybe 2 or 3 weeks if you have to, because you're waiting. She never got the clearance.
So now we have some truth emerging. You bring somebody on a day in a day pass while you're waiting. And that's exactly what happened.
But not for six months, Catherine.
Now we have some truth, I'll repeat, emerging. You bring somebody, Heather has just confirmed, you bring somebody in on a day pass for a few weeks. And what happened here is exactly...
Catherine, hang on. 6 months is almost semi-permanent. So you've got someone coming in every day for six months. Pretty much permanent,
isn't it? Let's see the truth. You bring somebody in for a few weeks. That's exactly what happened. And the weeks continued because there was no answer in relation to the process.
Were you not curious about
absolutely,
why?
Absolutely.
You sent an email to whom?
Absolutely. I sent an email internally in March to say what was the delay in relation to this.
What answer did you get?
That the process was continuing or something like that. It was vague, you know, but I drew...
Did you have no concerns you were bringing this person in on a daily basis using this, day pass system, and you're looking at all of these days and hours being clocked up
And you still hadn't asked her what
We're jumping to conclusions here. So I've done nothing wrong. Heather has admitted that. You bring somebody in. And the application form...
You're misrepresenting what I said.
It's really important that we let facts out here because facts are important and people will judge and vote accordingly to who they trust. In relation to this,
Catherine, a question. Did you not consider when you decided to run for the presidency that this would not come out?
This person came highly recommended. I can vouch for that person that was in my office. Eamon O'Quay, former minister in TD.
He doesn't do get the clearance.
Can we...
Catherine, the simple question I asked you was, did you not contemplate, when I'm running for president, I've decided to throw my hat in the ring, this might come out, and therefore deal with it first before it becomes what you characterise as a smear?
I'm going to try again. This woman is an absolute success story of the prison system, a success story that we absolutely need, who fully rehabilitated
her
life.
Was there nobody else?
Absolutely not. That woman came highly recommended with very specific qualifications. Just on the risk, let me say that this woman was with me every day. I know nothing in the sense of what the concerns were from the guards because nobody ever communicated with me.
Did you know her track record? Did you know that she had emerged from prison?
Of course I did.
And what she had been convicted
of? Of course I did. I took advice in relation to this from Eamon O'Quay, who visited...
from the Gardaí.
The Gardaí had nothing to do with me. The Gardaí are absolutely separate from me.
Okay.
Absolutely
now,
nothing to do with me.
There are other questions of judgment which I want to put to the pair of you.
But just one thing. It might be a registered political party, Catherine, but Éirigí tried to pull down the Good Friday Agreement, and they're very clear. That's very clear. That is their record. She is a member of Éirigí. You talk about reaching out the hand of friendship. That particular lady was involved on an incident when the Queen visited this country where there was an effigy of the Queen beheaded. Now, is that the way you talk to your neighbours? Like, this is the kind of behaviour that this lady was involved in. You have to question.
Okay, we'll pause there, and we have more questions to ask after this.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Online at aviva.ie.
This.
Welcome back to the News Talk Live presidential debate. The candidates with me, Heather Humphreys and Catherine Connolly. Now, we've talked about Catherine's judgment. Heather, in your case, you've been criticised for two constituency matters, one favour you did and one favour you did not do, according to Lucia O'Farrell. But first of all, the favour that you did, passing on a communication from a constituent to the Department of Agriculture. You said you had no hand actor or part in it, you simply passed on the communication. But you must know that any letter coming from a minister to another department gets precedence over something that might drop through the letterbox.
Well, this has been well aired. Over 5 years ago, I received a letter from a constituent. My office sent it without comment, without a covering letter, to the Department of Agriculture because it related to the department. The Secretary General...
It was about an animal cruelty case that subsequently was dropped.
Well, can I just say that I abhor animal cruelty and people who don't look after their animals shouldn't have them. And that's my position on that. I received a communication or a letter from a constituent. My staff sent it to the Department of Agriculture.
Do you accept that a ministerial missive has more weight than something that drops through the letterbox?
There was no comment on it. It was sent.
It doesn't matter.
Directly.
It comes from your office.
Yeah, but it was sent. It was a letter.
Did they know where it came from in the Department of Agriculture?
Yeah, just a second now.
That's a simple question.
I received a letter, and my staff sent it to the Department of Agriculture because it related to the Department of Agriculture.
And the point here is
the Secretary General in the Department of Agriculture at a public accounts committee stated very clearly there was no political interference or representation on that case. And secondly, the minister of the day, Minister Dara Kaleri, said on the record of the Dáil that there was no political interference in that case.
Why did you not simply say to your constituent, this is not my affair, this is the Department of Agriculture, send it to them? Instead, he got you to pass it on, and we all know the force of a ministerial missive arriving in another department. It is taken much more quickly and much more seriously than a letter, as I say, that drops through the letterbox.
I made no comment, I made no recommendation, there was no covering letter with that letter.
Had you read the letter from your constituent?
That's a simple question.
Yeah. Well, had you read it before you passed it on?
I glanced at the letter, and I'll tell you how this works. I receive thousands of letters as a TD. And I sit down, possibly on a Friday, with my staff, and I go through the letters. And if anything relates to another department, or indeed if it related to an issue within social protection, I'd say send that on to the relevant people in the department.
How well did you know the constituent who passed it on to you?
The constituent, I didn't know the constituent.
At all?
I had never met them beforehand. And that happens on many occasions. People come into your office, or people send you on correspondence. You don't know them. But my job has always been, you know, to highlight issues on behalf of people, and to if they have concerns, as a public representative.
Did you inquire subsequently, because this has been a matter of some controversy, as to why the case was dropped?
Someone who
had a track record of animal cruelty before, and suddenly this second case is dropped. Why?
Yeah. Well, just to be clear, the letter was sent by my staff to the Department of Agriculture. I had no further role or input into what
did
happened afterwards.
Did you ever inquire as to what happened?
No, I didn't.
When it became a matter of public controversy?
No, I didn't inquire, because it was nothing to do with me. It was a matter for the Department of Agriculture.
All right, the second matter is the favour it appears you did not do, according to Lucia O'Farrell, whose son Shane, as you know, was hit by a driver who should not have been behind the wheel. There were mistakes made right throughout the system, the Gardaí, the courts and all the rest of it. And she says that you did not stand shoulder to shoulder. She's a constituent as well, as the farmer was a constituent, yet she feels that you did not stand shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, well, can I just say, my heart goes out to Lucia O'Farrell and her family over the loss that they had when their son Shane was killed in a road traffic accident. Now, I did speak to Lucia. I spoke to her on a number of occasions, and I spoke to her at length. And when I finished the conversation, I felt, you know, my heart was broken for her, and that is the truth. What she had to endure in terms of the loss of her son is unbearable. Now, I did make representations on her behalf, and I'm sorry if she thinks I didn't do enough. I did my best, and I'm glad that she has got a state apology from the Minister.
When you were in justice, could you not have done more?
No. When I was in justice, there was an independent process taking place. It was headed up by Judge Houghton. I couldn't interfere in that, because if I did, I could derail the process.
What do you say, though, to the perception of the O'Farrell family that you did not do enough?
I'm sorry if she thinks I didn't do enough. I have tried
to help
anybody.
She has said to us, by the way, she got in touch saying that sorry if is not good enough.
I didn't do enough.
Sorry if. She says you didn't do enough.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry if she feels I didn't do enough to help her. I did my best. I made representations to different ministers on her behalf. As I said, I'm glad she has got a state apology.
So you think you did enough?
I tried my best. I actually counted one day, but this is a good while ago. I think I got somewhere in the region of 25,000 representations during my term as a TD. And I did my best for everybody. And I'm sorry if some people feel I didn't do enough.
Now, Catherine, you were pursued by the Irish Times to give an answer on whether or not you had represented banks in repossession cases. In other words, people get evicted on foot of those cases. And you were pursued again and again. You kept on saying, I answer the question, and you didn't. Because the simple question required a yes or a no answer. Did you represent banks against people who are going to be maybe defaulters on mortgages who are going to be evicted? It's a yes or a no. Did you represent the banks in those cases or not?
Just in relation to Lucy O'Farrell, where the government failed and where the minister was part of that at the time, was Lucy O'Farrell and the family repeatedly asked for a thorough investigation and an inquiry, and they didn't get it.
They got vindication, though, in the end.
Absolutely, and they got an apology, and I thank the government for that apology, but they never got what they wanted.
Now, back to the question, the yes or no answer.
I absolutely stood and said I've represented...
No, I heard all of that, and pursued by Jack Horgan-Jones, who said it's a yes or a no answer.
Absolutely.
Have you represented the banks against people who lost their homes?
I have represented banks. I have represented people who had orders of possession against them.
The question is very simple. Did you represent the banks against people who lost their homes?
I have represented lots of people in my career as a barrister. I have represented credit institutions. I've represented people who were the subject of orders for possession. I've represented people in family law and so on. But sometimes
you have to turn up your nose at a case and say, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm too busy. I am researching another case. Barristers have ways of turning down if they don't want the work.
We're obliged to represent
people. Even the Bar Council says that there are reasons why barristers sometimes do not take cases.
If there's a conflict of interest, and obviously on occasions that happens with barristers, but the essence of our system is an independent bar. That is the essence of our justice system, are part of the essence.
So your principles never play any part in your barristerial activities?
I was a barrister up to 2016. I took leave of absence. I made a principal decision not to carry on two professions. And after taking a leave of absence for a year or two, then I left. I left the profession and I concentrated completely on...
So the answer to the question that Jack Horgan-Jones wanted is yes, that you did on occasion.
The answer to the question is I represent lots of different people.
Heather, what do you think of Donald Trump?
Well, Donald Trump has he's elected as the president of the US, and I respect his mandate. You never know what you're going to hear from Donald Trump.
That's your verdict on him. You never know what you're going to
do. He's a sort of person that you don't know what he's going to say next, and that's my view of him. But having said that, he's I have to recognise that he has done a lot of work in terms of getting a peace deal in Gaza, and that is to be commended.
This is the man who funded Israel to do what they did in Gaza, and then takes credit for stopping the fire.
Well, I want to see is that in Gaza, that the mothers are waking up this morning and their children are in their beds. That didn't happen. And it was terrible what happened
there.
And we all know that.
And we know it
was genocide.
What do you think of Donald Trump?
I think at this moment I have to take hope. And it's ironic from what's happening, peace talks. I'm extremely worried, actually, because this is just phase one. And there's absolutely no mention of the details in relation to will this peace last or not, and no recognition of what has led to this genocide over the last two years. So we now have somebody bringing peace, somebody that utterly funded and armed the genocide, armed Israel to carry out the genocide. And so there's a cause for reflection here in the world that this is where we're at. Somebody who funded and armed genocide is now being proposed as the recipient of a peace prize.
But the world is a complex place. We didn't really talk about the triple lock, but you would be in favour of maintaining it. Why would you want Trump or Xi or Putin to tell Ireland where to send its forces?
Because I earlier mentioned that on the day we go out to vote, that will be the 80th anniversary.
We heard it before.
It's very important.
The question is, why would you give them a veto over where the Irish government deploys its troops?
The
Because that's what the triple lock amounts to.
The triple lock is a lot more than that. And the triple lock is at the core of our neutrality, a policy that's proactive and the best defence that we have. The triple lock, no lesser a person than the Taoiseach, told us it was at the core of our neutrality. The Lisbon Treaty and the Nice Treaty.
Which you voted against.
Absolutely. And it had to be rerun to get solemn guarantees in relation to our neutrality.
Okay, but again, you have a great ability not to address the particular question, which was, why give Xi or Putin or Trump a veto over where the Irish government deploys its forces?
Actually, people laugh because I don't seem to have the ability to avoid answering a question, and I'm blunt and to the point.
Well, answer that question then.
The question is that the triple lock was part of our neutrality. It's at our core.
Will you please address give Putin and Trump and Xi a veto over where our business?
I'm not giving them a veto. That's part of the infrastructure of the UN, unfortunately. The five members of the UN Security Council. There is also a General Assembly that's a force for good.
And but does not have the power of veto, as you know.
If we could...
I mean, it's mum and apple pie stuff here. You know, because I've asked you a simple question. Why give these world leaders a veto over what Ireland does?
I didn't give them a veto. The UN structures did. We need to reform the UN without a doubt.
Oh, that's a big day's work. Heather Humphreys, what do you
think?
It's
the big day's work to bring peace in the world. Mm. It's much easier to have war when we have an arms industry building up all of the time.
I believe that we should not have to ask the permission of Putin or indeed China or indeed the
US. You want the triple lock gone?
No, I want... The way it is at the minute, the third part of that lock is asking the UN for permission. And it can be vetoed by the UN Security Council and these countries. For example, if we were sending peacekeeping forces to Ukraine, do you think Russia would actually agree that? I'm sure they wouldn't. So I don't want Russia or China or the US to have any input into our foreign policy.
That means getting rid of the triple lock.
Yeah, we are an independent country and we're a mature country, and I think we are quite capable of making up our own decision. But at the end of the day, that legislation will go through the Houses of the Oireachtas, and it will. It doesn't matter what my personal opinion is. The job of the president will be to determine if it is within our constitution.
You're not president yet. If the government, what's your view?
I'm giving my view.
Are intent on getting rid of the triple lock, then there should be a referendum, because the Taoiseach of our country has said the triple lock is at the core of our neutrality. So if we're going to get rid of the triple lock, then that question should be put to the people by way of referendum.
Yeah. Okay, some of our listeners have been in touch with various questions. Question from John for Catherine. Would you invite Claire Daly and Mick Wallace to the Oireachtas?
All of this is speculation as to who I'll invite. Since day one, you know, Pat, the first interview I did outside the Dáil, I had a question from a respectable journalist based on absolutely nothing. Would my friends who were in Buswells come out and support me? One wasn't in the country and the other was somewhere else. And that's the level of question in relation to two respected parliamentarians, and both respected across the floor of the Dáil when they were in the Dáil.
But not necessarily of late with their stance on Putin and Ukraine?
We differ on many things. My campaign is made up of many parties and none who support the values that I stand for without necessarily agreeing with everything that we say.
Question for Heather from Deirdre. Do you support fox hunting?
I've never been fox hunting in my life, but what I do support is rural pursuits, and there's a lot
which includes fox hunting.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of controls in place around rural pursuits, and I think once the rules are abided by, I support rural pursuits. That includes once people abide by the rules. There are a lot of conditions, a lot of rules in place, and I support the right of rural people to continue on with the pursuits that they have been doing for many, many years.
We have to leave it there. An interesting and compelling debate. Thank you very much to the two candidates. I was going to ask you what kind of a disaster it would be if the other got the job. I'm not sure you want to contribute to that particular question, but thank you both. Heather Humphreys and Catherine Connolly, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.